Welcome to the Senia Happy Hour podcast with your host, Lori Bull. We know you're busy, so we bring you 1 hour's worth of content in under 30 minutes, leaving you time for a true happy hour.
Hello, everyone. Today I had the opportunity to speak with Estelle Barung-Hughes, who is going to be one of our keynote presenters here at the South Africa conference in just a few days. Estelle's the director of an NGO, and she's also an administrator at an international school. She shares today all about the inspiring work she's doing and gives us a sneak peek into what she'll be talking about at the conference. So let's just get right to it. Hello, Estelle. Welcome. Welcome to this podcast.
Hello, Lori. So good to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to meet you in person coming up here in a few, probably when this airs, a few days.
Oh, brilliant.
So
brilliant.
I'm really excited to see you in South Africa. So before we talk about all your work that you're going to be doing at the Senia conference, let me just share a little bit. You're currently the secondary principal at the International School of Dakar and the director of the NGO Africa Learning International, which is focused on SDG 4, Quality Education for All. You train teachers, you organize international events, you're a blogger, you're a musician. Is there anything you don't do, Estelle?
Well, that's a great introduction. Thank you so much. Sometimes it feels a little bit busy. I like to have fun.
Wow, very impressive. So tell us about your NGO.
Okay, Africa Learning International is an NGO that whose first aim is to support African teachers and to establish a bridge between teachers on the continent working in public schools and international teachers, because I am a Cameroonian citizen. I grew up in my country in public schools, and then I became an international teacher. And I think that these two worlds that hardly ever meet can really cross-inspire beautifully, hence Africa Learning International.
That is fantastic and exactly what we're aiming to do in this upcoming conference. So how do you do it?
Yes, you know, I actually noticed it in the Senia conference and the way you have created special rates for local schools and the fact that, you know, you center educators and not only international educators. I really do love it. The main way I do this is via special projects and via our conference. In our conference, we have a central theme. Last year, it was decolonizing the curriculum. And teachers from national systems and international schools talking about different aspects of decolonizing the curriculum. That's where the encounter comes in. I also like helping students meet. I worked last year on the theme of peace through a competition where students could write a very short text the size of a tweet about peace, and students all over Africa participated, and beyond Africa as well, from international schools, from UWCs, from national schools in Cameroon, in Ghana. Beautiful.
Wow.
I loved it.
Wow. Wow. I would love to, maybe we could get a link to some of their responses and add them
yes.
to our podcast.
Definitely. It would be really interesting that reflection. I was really inspired by the students and the children who participated in this competition. There was the beautiful, open-minded definition of peace as mutual understanding. And there was also advocacy for Africa, strong voices against racism. African children, they're great. I love them.
That's amazing. So you know that at Senia, we're really all about inclusion. And I'm wondering, in your work as a secondary principal, whether it's at your current school, International School of Dakar, or previous schools, how do you, as a leader, as an administrator, promote inclusion within your school?
Inclusion is part of my school's DNA. The International School of Dakar has been doing inclusion work for many, many years. It started with our students demanding diversity and inclusion and leading us into a reflection that today has normalized listening tools, collaboration, and just a sense of community where equality, a feeling of togetherness, is really strong. Our motto, you'll see all over the school, is Nyofar. It means we are together. To me, inclusion is obviously about changing systems, changing recruitment, and enhancing diversity. But beyond that, it is really about sharing humanity and understanding how interlinked we all are. And I think everything starts there. It starts with Ubuntu. You know, it's nice to talk about Ubuntu as we are going to the land of Ubuntu in a few days. I just want to recognize here the influence of Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela on my thought and my vision for education and for the future of the children that we are raising. To me, inclusion starts with that understanding that we are one.
Beautiful. I'm really encouraged and interested in how your students were the ones that you said demanded the change.
Yes. How did our students demand change at ISD, International School of Dakar? They created an Instagram page called Black at ISD, and that page I'd stumbled across even when I was not yet thinking of applying to the school. What's really interesting is that this Instagram page was never pushed under the carpet by the organization in the name of performative diversity and inclusion. We owned it. We owned it and we decided to do better. And that's why I tend to attract the attention of institutions to the genesis of their diversity, equity, and inclusion movement, because each DIJ movement is special to the context of an institution. And remembering why we are doing this and how all of this started gives you the power that you need to continue the work in a contextualized way.
Very impressive. And you also mentioned that, you know, it needs to be systematic, the change and the inclusion. I'm wondering, how do we get more administrators, interested in this? How do we affect school change for inclusion?
It's always difficult when you have a group of educators who are passionate about DIJ and are trying to convince administrator to pay attention. These are situations that are potentially very stressful, very harmful, and they lead to battle fatigue. I prefer the other scenario where the administration is telling you as an educator, as a student, as a parent, come as you are, bring your authenticity to school, and we'll figure things out, respecting everybody's identity. When I was starting my school year in a new school, International School of Dakar, as a new principal, that's exactly what my director, Sandy McKenzie, said. And I was like, okay, I'm at home here.
Yes. Yes. You found your peeps, right? That's awesome.
It's important. It's important to find that spot, and also to understand that you cannot single-handedly change a whole institution's culture. It's just too difficult sometimes.
It is. Well, speaking of culture, speaking of identity, tell us a little more about you.
Ooh, I come from Cameroon. That's always where I start. Really yeah. interesting, very strong sense of national identity here, despite the fact that I'm an international teacher and I like traveling around the world. My country has 250 different languages. Can you imagine that? Can you even
No,
conceive
it's
of that?
amazing.
This idea that, you know, that a nation should have one language and we should all be the same, it's completely challenged by this country of mine. My identity has also been forged by the experiences that I've had outside of Cameroon. I've studied in Africa, in the Congo. I've then moved to France. Then I worked in India, in the Netherlands, in Switzerland, where I stayed for a long time. And I have to say that I'd stay there for such a long time that now I feel I'm a little bit Swiss. If my children hear this, they'll love me. Because they'll be like, yes, you said it, finally. And now I'm in Senegal and I love it.
That's great. Excuse me. Well, you are coming to Johannesburg very soon. I think at the time that we produce this, we are literally 3 days, maybe 5 days away from the conference. So tell us, why did you feel a call to keynote at the Senya conference?
It's a long story, and it's also an ISA story. So I want to salute here the big organizers / sponsors of the Senya conference. I was contacted by a member of ASIA and Joel of ISA, pardon, and Joel Laban, who were working around this DIJ tool for the continent. And I asked one question. I said, so who is going to think about how to do this work in an African context? And she said, you're going to do it. I said, okay, let's go. So together with my partner, Estelle Bunya-Fumeju, we've created the course called Twice With. We sat together, we started this conversation, and I wound up writing the chapter. And I learned so much doing this. And there was a lot of South Africa in this chapter, because I was obviously talking about the work of Desmond Tutu in post-apartheid truth and reconciliation processes, the thoughts of Nelson Mandela, and how thinking about how hard it is to push this discourse around Ubuntu and interconnectedness. Sometimes people tell you that it's too idealistic, that doing this work is ignoring the harshness of people who have been, you know, denied by the post-apartheid injustice. And I want to say, when I hear that two people, three people, four people started the work, but we have to continue it every day. As long as there's still injustice, it's on us to continue Ubuntu and to continue seeing every other human being as our own brother and sister, and to act accordingly.
Beautiful. Can you share a little bit about what we'll be learning from you during the Senya conference?
During the Senya conference, without revealing too much, I want to deconstruct B concepts that we are used to. Just to give you an idea, democracy, gender, color, you know, socioeconomic wealth. We're just kind of thinking about these concepts that we use to pigeonhole people, that we use also to describe and work with the students that we have in our schools, and see how understanding the complexity of our identities and how these identities evolve when we move from one context to the next, and understanding how enriching it is for the student and the educator. Students sincerely lose a lot of their personal identities because they are only partially seen by the people educating them, because the identities projected on them are fragmentary and they are not given the space to say who they are. And on top of these categorizations, there's also the dynamics within the student's body that inhibits authenticity, because teenagers naturally want to belong in a way that sometimes erases who they are. How do we encourage our students to embrace their mother tongues, to embrace their identities, to embrace their difference, and not to feel ashamed in contexts where internationalism sometimes means Anglo-centrism or cultural centrism? This is the discussion that I want to have, the reflection that I want to have around very concrete example and case studies.
Ah, I can't wait. I cannot wait. Well, I think that's all we have time for on today's podcast, but we'll see you soon. I'm truly inspired by your work. I can't wait to learn more from you.
Thank you so much, Lori, for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us for today's show. For more information, including how to subscribe and show notes, please head to our website. That's senyainternational.org/podcasts. Until next time, cheers.